Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be calling, I don't do no.
It is Friday, February 4th. Almost forgot the month, Chris. February 4th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. I'm Zach Smith with my co-host, Chris Drew. As always, every morning by 10:30, you can guarantee that we have an episode out for you. I hope everyone is surviving. Everyone up in at least Ohio is surviving, and really the whole Midwest, this winter, I don't know, it's just
vortex.
The vortex. It's unbelievable. We had to get a foot of snow in the last 24 hours. All my kids are off school, snow day for 2 days. So my son for his birthday got a 4-day weekend essentially. So he is loving life. I'm going to have a birthday party tomorrow with 13, 12 year olds sleeping at my house. So just pray for me, I guess. it is certainly going to be something. But anyways, I want to talk. We got a lot to talk about today. A lot of stuff going on. Brian Harsin's banging his assistant. Pete Golding, the DC at Alabama, got a DUI. We're going to talk about Joe Burrow and his off the field accomplishments. And then obviously it's Mailbag Friday, Chris. So we got to get that going. We are going to do Twitter Spaces this afternoon. Chris, I didn't even ask you before, but are you cool with going 1:30 a little early?
Yeah, I'm just going to be home with my siblings all day. So you might hear some kid action in the background. But
yeah, that happens.
Yeah, I'll be here.
It's snow days everywhere, right? So we will do a Twitter Spaces around 1:30 if you want to set something, set an alarm, set an alert. On. I think you have to do it on my social media because I always create it, Chris, or maybe.
Yeah, you create it. Yeah, you create it. So it has to be set on yours maybe, but I mean,
either way,
for mine, when I jump in, it will alert people as well.
Yeah, so 1:30, Twitter Spaces, come check out. I also wanted to mention, I don't do a good job of telling the audience about kind of all our tiers on Patreon, mainly because I don't want to ask like I don't want to be a salesman 24/7, but it is important to grow the platform, to generate revenue. And our Menace tier, I think, is really unique. I don't think there's anything out there like it. I mean, we have, so on our Menace tier, it's $30 a month, but you get, you're immediately added to a group chat with Chris and myself and our whole platform and all the other Menace members. It's an awesome community. You get all the gambling picks. You get access to our VIP Instagram, which we're just starting. So I will go live on it. Chris will join me on live on it, and we'll do a bunch of stuff on that Menace VIP Instagram. And then there's a bunch more going on for that tier and other tiers. So if you're interested in that, check it out at patreon.com/Menace2Sports, the number 2. And if nothing else, $5 a month, you get a custom RSS feed straight to your phone. So you don't have to wait for iTunes to upload shows or, you know, like yesterday I did the interview with Daniel Lust, and it was out like 5 hours early for Patreon subscribers, just because it's so easy to get it up there. And I don't have to do the stuff, or we don't have to do the stuff we need to do to get it out. So anyways, just a quick plug for our Patreon if you're interested. Also, MyBookie, our partner, as always, I've told you, if you haven't done it yet, you need to jump on it. And I'm going to give you one of our handicappers parlay for today. If you go to MyBookie, promo code Menace, they'll do a deposit match. It's like a broken record, but it's a great place to bet, especially if you don't have other options where you live. But our handicapping parlay is an Ohio small basketball parlay. So Wright State money line and Toledo money line, 20 to win 20. So $200 to win $200. Wright State and Toledo. Get it going, get it hot, and let's win some money. So that's my parlay, Chris. That's what I got for you. Also, last thing to mention, Super Bowl Big Board. If you want to win $3,000, and if nothing else, help raise money for charity, Venmo $100 to Cameron Media. We'll put you on the big board. $500 first third quarter payout, $1,000 at halftime if you hit the score. And if you hit the final score, you win $3,000. All in all, $5,000 in winnings can be yours for $100. So go get you a square for the Super Bowl. We're a little over a week away from Joe Burrow taking on the Super Bowl. It's going to be fun to watch. So Chris, what is up, man?
Not much, man. Hanging in there. You know, everybody's home from school today. Everyone's at the house. So I got a full house. I was just trying to wave my siblings on to go downstairs because they're up here being some absolute demons. But on the football side, something I don't know what you want to open up with, but Pete Golding got a DUI in Tuscaloosa. Was that yesterday or pretty recently?
Yeah, I think it was, it might have been early hours of yesterday. The news broke yesterday. So the defensive coordinator at Alabama got a DUI. And I think the crazy, so I have a number of sources in, you know, the coaching world, obviously, a number of friends, and a couple of them have kind of, you can call it a conspiracy theory if you want, but a couple of them have alluded to the fact that this was not by accident. This was not just him making a mistake. Obviously, he had some drinks and drove, which is always problematic. But in reality, you have to understand something. In Alabama, in Tuscaloosa, like Alabama football coaches and players are not getting DUIs. Maybe if they're like blackout drunk and hit something. But if this guy just had some drinks and was driving and a cop pulled him over in Tuscaloosa, oh, he's 100% getting a ride home, or they're telling him to come get picked up. No chance he's getting charged with DUI. Zero. I mean, not even a slim chance, unless the defense wasn't great. Georgia beat him for a natty and Nick Saban wants him gone or, you know, the people in Tuscaloosa are not happy with him. All of a sudden he loses a natty and it's like, hey, that guy drinks every Wednesday at this bar, you know, let's put a cop out there, see what happens, right? So a little conspiracy theory going on down in the SEC country from two different schools that I talked to, friends of mine that work there, that they were like, that was no accident. Now, I mean, you lose to Georgia in the national championship game and all of a sudden the DC gets a DUI. That's wild.
But, in my head, in movie form, Zach, it's like when he pulls him over, the cop pulls him over, says, all right, license registration, walks back to the cop car, and then goes and calls Nick Saban. Nick, we got him. Are you sure we want to go through with this?
Right, right. Let me double check with the mayor. But it is funny. I mean, I got a DUI in 2012, my first year at Ohio State, and it's funny how, you know, it is a storyline, right? And it's never okay to have drinks and drive. I mean, I was an idiot. I shouldn't have done it, but I certainly wasn't to the point where I couldn't. I didn't feel like I was impaired, which I know is what a lot of people say. I know I wasn't over the legal limit, but I've always learned and been told you don't blow in breathalyzers. You don't do any of that, because at that point, if you're doing that, all the police are trying to do is gather evidence against you, right? They've already decided they're going to charge you. It doesn't change the outcome. And so that's what I was told by from friends of mine that are lawyers for a long time. And I had a guy pull me over. So one of my best friend's dad just passed away. And so he called me. He was out he was intoxicated. His dad just died, really emotional. And so I left my house to go pick him up. And I sat there and had a beer with him before we got in the car to come back to just talk. And then on our drive back, I was speeding. I mean, it was late at night and I wasn't trying to be out at that hour. And I did have, I had had an IPA, which obviously they're stronger beers and they have a stronger odor to them. And he was very intoxicated. And, so we're driving home and he's going to stay at my house and I get pulled over. And sure enough, the guy gave me a DUI, and how it never got out, I have no idea. Obviously I was terrified because I just knew that I was this young coach that got hired at Ohio State. I was going to get fired for sure. I'm sitting here like, this is such a sad reality, right? Where these things can happen. And even if I blew in the breathalyzer and blew under, he already put me in handcuffs at that point. He was already arresting me. Like, there was, you don't ever get let out of handcuffs, right? It's not like they're like, you're arrested, put you in handcuffs, blow in the breathalyzer. It says 0.01. And they're like, oh, never mind. And then they take them off. That never has happened. Right. So I, you know, the details of this are, we won't know unless a body cam footage comes out and the guy's like falling all over the place. But I don't know. It's just wild to me that it happened in Tuscaloosa. Like, that doesn't happen down there. The culture down there is, you know, sweep it under the rug. Don't say shit. Get them home. You know, you don't want bad publicity for, you know, Roll Tiders. So it's just crazy that it actually came out and he got arrested. He either was really, really drunk or they wanted him to get arrested.
I remember when JT Barrett had his little incident and it was the number one leading story on ESPN the entire week, and kind of, you know, kind of anticipation of what Urban Meyer's going to do. They were kind of making fun of Urban Meyer, saying that, oh, there's no way he suspends him for the big game, blah, 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 blah. And with this, I haven't seen really anything on the main ESPN network. I know that local sites have picked it up and talked about it, but in terms of just kind of national media running with this, I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen anything. ESPN. And it's not surprising, right? That was the first thing I tweeted about. Like, do you think this will be handled similarly to if an Ohio State coach did it? Like, that's just the question, right? And if not, you have to question your media source, like what you read. And people, Alabama fans that follow me started replying with like articles from like the local newspaper. I'm like, that's not what I'm talking about. No one goes to Alabama.com or whatever the fuck, the AlabamaTimes.com and gets their news other than people in Tuscaloosa. And they already heard about this. They already knew about this. Like, shit, I heard about it. So it obviously was reported. I just want to know if the national media is going to give it the same attention that they would if, I don't know, if Jim Knowles just got a DUI. There's no chance. It would be one of the lead stories on ESPN. Everyone would be talking about it. Every show on ESPN. It would be everywhere if Jim Knowles got a DUI. But Pete Golden gets a DUI, and they don't talk about it because it's their cash cow. ESPN makes so much money off of Alabama being a dynasty that it's sick. They own the SEC network. That is revenue to them. So SEC crimes are swept under the rug. We've seen it 100 times. I mean, there's sexual assault investigations that they don't even bring up. And they're huge investigations. I forget what school it was, but it just happened where they were investigating this big sexual harassment deal. And no one ever talked about it. It's like, hello, are we not going to discuss this? Because I promise you, if Notre Dame had this going on, it would be everywhere. If Ohio State was doing this investigation, that's all they would talk about. They would have like people camped out for the investigators every day to get an update. It's just the not even the hypocrisy. The controlling of the media is disgusting, is what it is.
I am currently on ESPN's website, the homepage, and under top headlines, it has everything. It has, you know, Jags hire Super Bowl winner Peterson as a coach. UCLA Ford arrested after, you know, appearing to spit on a fan. Haslam saying, you know, Hugh Jackson never accepted blame for losing. Da 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 da. All these things, and nowhere on there is Pete Golding. And I know for a fact, because I just my only reference point is the Ohio State situation with JT Barrett. That was all over everything. They had a nice little picture banner, all that. But right now, there's absolutely nothing. Zach, I've been scrolling for about 30 seconds and not a single thing.
Well, it's not surprising. It's on brand. It's what you would expect. I think everyone, the minute I tweeted it out, everyone's like, duh, we know the answer to that, right? It's not going to be discussed hardly at all. So it's just the hypocrisy and the narrative controlling that ESPN can do is fascinating. It really is.
I want to move from Pete to Joe Burrow, a legend on the field, off the field, hometown hero. He did say he's a Buckeye. He did say that in 4K. But you sent me a story about Joe Burrow, you know, getting it.
He's getting it got in.
Impressive resume.
So I guess there's a number of people that have submitted to this. I don't even know the site. It doesn't matter the site. That kind of Joe Burrow, as good as he is off the field, he is that in the bedroom. And one girl said, she says multiple sources that hooked up with a certain Super Bowl QB contender in college claimed that his pickup line was he wanted to be number one on the field and number one in bed. And clearly it worked because the legend is growing and growing. And these anonymous submissions are really supporting the claim that Joe is that guy in the bedroom also. So shout out to the big dick energy for real in Joe Burrow, getting it done on and off the field.
This is the really fun part of football, of NFL football, especially this year in particular. Everybody, this is the part of Joe Burrow's career where everybody is pulling for him, Zach. It won't be like this for a long time. After, you know, the more success he has, the more people that will naturally just, you know, root for him to fail or look for little things and root against him. The same reason they rooted for Tom Brady to fail later on, because, you know, you get sick of success. When a guy rises up, you like him, but once you're at that top, you get people rooting against you. So this is the fun part of Joe Burrow. So to all the Ohio State fans, LSU fans, whoever, Cincinnati fans, enjoy this, because for the next 10 to 15 years, it's not going to be everybody rooting for your quarterback. But I do think this is a really awesome window.
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants Joe Burrow to win this. I mean, not everybody, but you know, the majority of the country wants the Bengals to win because they want Joe Burrow to have that storyline. They want that legend to start being created. They want that persona to grow. And, you know, I'm here for it. I mean, I love Joe Burrow, and I'm going to try like hell to get him on the show this offseason if I can. but you know, it's hard to get a Super Bowl champ quarterback, even if you know him. And I'm not great at that, pushing boundaries and being forceful, which I probably need to get better at, but it is what it is. Excited for Joe and really look forward to next Sunday. It's going to be fun. Well, here's a question, Chris, and everyone's talking about it. Why is the Super Bowl not played on Saturday?
I've had this complaint for forever because growing up, Zach, we were not allowed to watch TV on school nights.
Yeah.
So we were allowed to watch the first half and then we had to go to bed for the Super Bowl only. But if it was on Saturday, that would be so much better. We could just watch it and not have to worry about the next day.
Well, it's just crazy. You know, why have a late game on Sunday night when I get it in season, NFL Sundays, and that's why they want to keep it on Sunday, but it's just stupid. It's not conducive to normal everyday life. It's not
practical.
No, it's just dumb. And I mean, especially you talk about like people that talk about it, sports radio, right? People that go on the radio, you know, morning sports radio. They have to stay up till 1 a.m. watching the Super Bowl, get up at 4 to go to work and talk about the Super Bowl. So they have to watch it. They can't miss it and sleep through it. So they're just going to be exhausted on Monday. It's just, and that's the way it is for everyone, right? You have a Super Bowl party and then you got to go to work on Monday. And it's like, damn, this sucks. I wish I had today off. And a lot of people take it off.
They play playoff games on Saturday. So I don't know why they don't play a Super Bowl. Saturday as well.
It just makes too much sense, but we can complain about it all day long. I know everyone that listens to this agree, so it's pointless.
Things that are practical. Okay, we do have a couple of mailbag questions. Remember, guys, every single week, if you guys submit that 5-star review or any review and ask a question, that is a guarantee to get your question on the show, as long as it's a good one and it makes some sense. My first question, Zach, is, you know, what group of offensive skill players would you trust to drive the ball 80 yards down the field, no timeouts, down 4 with 1 minute left in the game, and probably talking from the Urban Meyer era on?
So we're talking about Ohio State skill players?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the ones that he picked were all Ohio State skill players.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's not a group. It's like if I could make like an all-star team to do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to go with JT Barrett in my time, just with his Penn State comeback, the way he marched down the field. I don't think JT Barrett's going to fail in that pressure situation. I know he's not as good of a thrower as some other guys. He's not as dynamic as some other guys, but he's a guy that in that situation with all that pressure and kind of that moment, right, where the spotlight is on the quarterback, JT always shined, always. And all of a sudden he would make throws that he didn't typically make, or he would find a way to get positive yards when you needed to. So JT would be the quarterback for sure. Let's see, receivers. I mean, I guess you just got to go with the tried and true receivers, right? I'd definitely have Michael Thomas in there, Terry McLaurin, and probably Jalen Marshall would be my three receivers. Just because Jalen had better ball skills than a couple other receivers, and he was pretty reliable in those situations. So those would be the three.
I thought for sure you were going to go KJ Hill.
Yeah, I could see going KJ. Jalen's just a little faster, but that's neither here nor there. I could definitely see going with KJ. Honestly, if that's a scenario, I'm probably going to go in 10 personnel, so KJ could be my fourth. But if I had to go with a tight end, I would say Jeff Heuermann. He could do it all. He could pass block. He could run block. If you needed to run the ball to get a first down to stop the clock, he was good in the pass game. He's one of the most underappreciated tight ends or players since Urban Meyer got to Ohio State until now. Just an absolute phenomenal player, extremely impactful. And people don't realize it, I guess, because he wasn't like Aaron Hernandez or Kyle Pitts. Like, he was a true tight end and he was a badass, like in the run game, pass pro, pass game, all of the above. So that would be my skill list, I guess, if it is an all-star team.
Running back
Zeke for sure.
Yeah,
that's not even close to debatable. You could talk about JK all day long, Trey Sermon, I don't care. Zeke was the best overall player that I've seen at that position ever, in pass pro, lead blocking, playing without the ball, running the ball, in the pass game, his hands, everything. He was that guy. So for sure, Zeke.
So I think, you know, I think I would go Justin Fields as quarterback. Just, I think he's the most talented to play that position ever. And then I would go Zeke in the backfield. I would go Michael Thomas on one side. And then The other side gets a little tricky for me because I want to pick. I would definitely pick. I think I'll pick Curtis Samuel as the other wide receiver.
Not me. Maybe if he's going to the backfield, maybe.
Okay, that's fair. I think I would like Curtis outside for kind of that gadget effect, kind of the same way that you picked Jalen Marshall. And then additionally, I think I would go Terry McLaurin as a third receiver, and then I think Hyerman at tight end. But I also think if you have that position, that group out there, you know, to begin with, you shouldn't be down four anyway.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You know,
that's a fact. Well, if we're doing, I mean, all time, I didn't include Justin Fields because I wasn't there with him. But if you include all time, I would definitely sub in Justin Fields at quarterback. I would have Garrett Wilson on the field somewhere, maybe even in the slot. Yeah, definitely, he played there 2 years ago. So he would probably be Michael Thomas, Terry McLaurin, and Garrett Wilson would be my three receivers. And if I had to have a fourth, it would be either KJ Hill or, you know, maybe Paris Campbell. And I could see an argument for Chris Olave. So there's just been so many. But yeah, Garrett would be on the field if we're talking all time.
You're right. I mean, I'd even said he's the best Ohio State receiver ever.
Yeah. So he would have to be on the field.
Yeah. I might even throw JSN. JSN feels like he always makes the clutches catches also.
Yeah, he'll be on that list. Like I told you, he's just got to show me. I need another year. I want to see that separation, see that speed. This reminds me a lot of J.K. Dobbins. When everyone loved J.K. Dobbins, and I was so critical of him just for not critical. I thought he was an outstanding player, but there was just two things that I hadn't seen him do ever, and that was pull away from people and hit creases at full speed and run away from people. He never did that until his last year. And the first couple games, he showed that he worked on that all offseason and started doing that. And I was like, all right, now we can talk about him like the fans have been talking about him. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the same way. He still has a couple things I need to see before he's an all-time great or a first rounder. He probably will show it. It'll probably happen. He'll probably have that development. And when he does, then those claims and conversations are validated. But before that, it's just it's a fan take that, yeah, he's great because he did these great things. It's like, yeah, he was productive, but that doesn't mean he's in that conversation yet. But I think he will be, to your point. I agree.
I think next year we're going to have a real cool conversation about him because I think he could have a chance. You know, Zach, I think he'll probably have one of the best statistical offensive seasons from any Ohio State wide receiver ever. I think he's going to be featured that much. And unlike, you know, there isn't a Garrett Wilson on that team. There isn't a Chris Olave on this team that's going to take away that many, that much away from him. I mean, obviously, like Martin, we expect big things from Marvin Harrison and Emeka and Fleming, but they're not already proven guys. So I think he's going to have a chance to put up a crazy season. But yeah, with JK, you're right. He got caught from behind one too many times. Personally, that's why I would put Zeke ahead of him. If he didn't get caught from behind, he didn't block nearly as well. Is that, but I think at the end of the year, I'll probably have JSN in my kind of 2 minute drill, 1 minute drill, you know, game on the line. That's what I want.
Oh, you can definitely see it. He's clutch.
He's incredibly clutch. He made some absolute insane catches. Someone asked, you know, I didn't really know what this meant, but I was going to let you kind of interpret it the way you wanted to and take it whatever direction you want to. What was your scariest in game moment while you were coaching?
Oh, scariest, I guess. Scariest personally, like I was scared. Would probably
like Urban's going to fire you, maybe, is where I went.
That's not how I just that hit me. I'll tell you a scary ass moment that was terrifying was when we were at Florida, we played at Kentucky. They brought a zero pressure and we were in empty. And in zero pressure in empty, the quarterback is supposed to motion in the nearest receiver to kind of give him an extra half a second from the edge rusher that's going to be free. Like they can keep adding people and they're always going to have a free rusher. So we just brought a receiver in to stand next to the tackle to make the extra rusher a little bit wider, a little bit further away. And the quarterback snaps the ball and drifts away from that free rusher and gets a ball out on what is called a warm route, meaning it's zero pressure. We can't run 12 yard corners. We have to run 8 yard corners, right? We warmed up all of our routes to beat the free heat, right? To beat the free rusher. And so Tim Tebow did it. He saw it was zero. He called out what we called no deep, meaning there's zero people deep. And he just didn't motion in the receiver. And so he rolled out to his right, and obviously he's a lefty, so he's looking to his right, and he's about to throw the ball, and a kid from Kentucky just ear-holed him, and Tim Tebow was out cold. Like, I thought he was dead. He was out, I mean, just wasn't moving. You didn't know if it was a neck. Like, you didn't know what happened. And so funny side story about it, I was a GA at the time, and there was only three people in the Florida program that knew the signals, right? And that was Tim Tebow, his backup, John Brantley, and me. Well, what always had happened, right, is if we blew somebody out or Tim Tebow came out because, you know, we were winning and John Brantley goes in, Tebow signals the place to him. Problem being, Tim Tebow's knocked out ice cold. So Brantley's got to go in the game and I'm up in the booth. And so I'll never forget, right when he got knocked out cold and everyone's like, holy shit, he's out. Dan Mullen turned to me, he goes, go. And I'm in the booth, you know, up whatever, 10 stories. I take off, sprint, go down the elevator, like hauling ass to get on the field, to try to get on the sideline in time for when John Brantley goes out there and the offense goes out there, I can signal him the plays. It was insane. I've never moved so fast in my life. And at the same time, you're worried about Tebow. Like, the motherfucker's out cold on the ground, just laying there. And so it was terrifying. So that would be the scariest moment of my career, I would say. And there was a couple other ones, like when Tyrone Prothrow broke his leg against us at Florida, you just felt the air come out of the stadium, mostly injury related. Like when guys got injured, serious injuries, that was always just like, oh, you felt just disgusted about it. So that's probably the scariest game moment that I've ever had. I was never really afraid of getting fired. I mean, I got fired so many times during games. I was never afraid of it because I saw early on, I mean, Urban fired Stan Drayton in the middle of the 2006 SEC championship game. I mean, I saw him do it all the time. So when he did it to me, I was like, okay, like,
see you tomorrow, boss.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you expect me to like react to that or what, but I mean, there's several times where Urban just went off on me and my players on the sideline because he thought we weren't playing well. And my favorite part was going in to watch film the next day. And really JT was playing like shit, or the offensive line was playing like shit. He's blaming us. He's like, you guys can't get fucking open. And then you watch the film and we're open everywhere. Either JT doesn't have time or JT's not making the throws. So I never really was scared of Urban ever, actually. When he tried to get threatening, I thought it was funny, and it honestly made it worse sometimes. Like the time he told me he would fucking choke me, and I started laughing. I'm like, you the fuck are you choking? I will beat the brakes off of you, old man. Like, you're gonna choke me. Okay, I'll choke you. If you choke me, I'll be the richest fucking guy in Columbus. Please choke me.
Like, what I will, are you talking about? I will own the pint house.
Well, what do you mean? It'll be the Zach Smith fucking pint house and the Zach Smith chop house. You're crazy shit. You choke me.
One person wanted to know, besides the players, what was the best thing about Ohio State?
That's a good question. I mean, if you're saying besides the player, I mean, obviously the support of the community, the fans are the best, the second best thing. The players are one. The fans are two. I mean, just, you know, the support you receive. I mean, even look at this platform. Like, I got fired and all this, like, I tarnished Ohio State, which we all, those of us that have actually looked into it, know that that is not true. I didn't do that. If anything, there's other people that you could blame for that. Not that I didn't make mistakes. Of course I made mistakes, but I think the support from the fan base and just the messages that you receive, is awesome. It's also a lot to deal with. If you lose a game, I mean, it can be brutal. But I'd say that the community, the Buckeye Nation community, is got to be the second best thing outside of, you know, my relationship with players. And then it also was the as a close to be was you know, some of the guys that I worked with. I mean, some of the coaches that I worked with, Tony Alford, I could list a million. Mike Vrabel was unbelievable. Luke Fickle, Kerry Combs. Just the number of people, the great people that I worked with, and even down to support staff people that are awesome. It's a saying, right? The people, the tradition, the excellence. Like, it really is the people at Ohio State are just, you know, for the most part, great people. You get into people like Doug Archie and people like that, and he's not a bad guy. I don't want to paint the picture wrong, but he's just a complete fucking douchebag. I would never want to talk to him and I never will again. I'll never have to talk to him ever again. It's going to be a glorious thing. But yeah, that's what it is. I would say the fans or just the community in general.
And did you have any first thoughts on the Ohio State press conferences, like the introductory press conferences with the new coaches? And what is that like kind of going into a new spot with a bunch of new coaches? Is that ever weird, awkward, or is everyone just filling each other out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little strange. I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit. You know, you're trying to make a good, it's all about the first impression, right? You only have one shot at a first impression. That's the old adage, the old saying, right? And so you got to get the first impression right. That goes with your first meeting with your players. They need to feel inspired, right? They need to feel like, wow, I'm excited to get to know this guy and see how he coaches me. Like, you need to sell yourself as much as you need to command and own the room. And that's with your players. That's the most important first thing you do when you get hired, is to have that first initial meeting with your players, and you have to own it. You have to absolutely kill it, because if you do, the trajectory of your room and your ability to coach them instantly goes up. And then with the media, obviously you want to make a good first impression, because you want the media members to think you are competent, because they're writing shit, and you want to be known as a great assistant coach. And so as much as coaches dislike the media, they understand the power of the media, and that, you know, if the receiver coach is being an asshole and the pass game's not working out, that article is going to be slanted at how the receivers aren't getting open, right? And if they really love the receiver coach and think he's a great coach, it might be more like the play calls or the quarterback. And not that you're trying to deflect blame, but you just want them, you want the media to think you're competent and a good right. football coach. So when they write stuff, it comes out, read between the lines, that coach is a good coach. I thought all the press conferences, the introductory press conferences, were great. I thought Jim Knowles sounded like a badass, like the kind of leader you need on defense. And I already talked about what I thought Justin Fry sounded like, and I think they all sounded great.
And Knowles was really giving off kind of mob boss kind
absolutely.
Of vibes.
Absolutely. I'm here for it.
I love it. It was like very calculated, very like assassin oriented. Like, I was like, okay. Like, I hear you, like, very soft spoken, but
Chris, the one thing in the news that I do want to bring up that we probably should have led with is the rumor mill is going crazy down at Auburn, that Brian Harsin is rumored to have been hooking up with his assistant, Klessie Crochet, maybe. The rumors are going crazy right now. They're saying he could be relieved of his duties as early as Saturday, tomorrow, as they investigate, was he sliding the old sausage in company women? And I'm going to tell you right now, she is a smoke show. It just blows my mind that they have women that look like this working around men that are away from their families, you know, 24/7. And I understand the need for pretty girls in recruiting. Urban, I mean, Urban's assistant was very attractive, but most of the time he had an older lady in that role. Not old, but, you know, not some 23-year-old absolute smoke show. And the recruiting girls, they were at a distance from the coaching staff. Like, I didn't talk to recruiting girls. I didn't really know their names. I would get to know their names maybe, but we never really interacted with them. And that was intentional, right? To keep them away. Now you go down to Alabama, and every coach has a recruiting girl that works in his office. And it's like, well, that's why all the coaches are banging the recruiting girls, right? That's just what it is. I mean, and for this to be happening at Auburn, it's like, welcome to the SEC, Coach Harsin. This ain't Boise anymore. Hope your wife's okay with it. And it's just, she's a smoke show. And the rumor is that he was hitting it, and he might be relieved of his duties. And it's like, I was always told, if they want to fire you, they'll find a reason. If they don't want to fire you, they won't use the reason, right? Go back to my situation, and I've said it 1,000 times. I was not a great assistant coach in 2015. I wasn't. I was dealing with a divorce, all this stuff in my personal life, you know, living on my own for the first time after having a family and being with them 24/7. And so I wasn't a very good assistant coach. I wasn't terrible, but I wasn't good enough for Ohio State. They could have fired me. If they wanted to fire me, they had the reason, right? But Urban knew that I was a really great football coach, so he didn't use the reason to fire me. Right? It wasn't like people make it out to be, where it was mandatory fireable offense, right? It was just that I could have been fired for it, and it would have been justified in the media cycle and the story they would have spun. But I didn't get fired for it because they didn't want to use it. This is one of those things that if Auburn, unless the girl is reporting it and has an issue with it, right? If there's just a rumor that he's banging his secretary or his assistant and there's no substantiated proof about it, they wouldn't fire him. they might have a conversation like, I don't know what's going on, but you know, this shit better not be going on in the program, and they move on. But Brian Harsin is a fish out of water in the SEC. So this comes up and here we are. Now they're talking about firing him, because if they do, it's because they want to fire him and they just found a reason.
Straight up. Now, what I think he should do is I think he should go on the internet and say, who has it better than us, with a picture of him and his wife? Because nowadays you can have a public affair and go right back to where you came from.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you really want to be 2022, he should start an OnlyFans.
Straight up.
I mean, you want to talk about recruits flocking to your program, start an Auburn OnlyFans. I'll subscribe right now. This will be my first OnlyFans subscription. Let me sign up.
I will not. Zach, I have nothing else for today, but remember, we are doing the spaces at 1:30 today, so hit that bell and make sure you join us for all your questions. We are here for all of the shenanigans. Other than that, say, got anything else?
No, that's it. That's it. We'll see you guys at 1:30. Look forward to the spaces, and we will catch you Monday morning again on the morning show. So Menace out.